You're listening to the Popmatic Podcast for October 8th, 2014. Books, we love them. Why don't we have a festival about them? The Southern Festival of Books.
Yay!
Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. Joining me today are
Amanda,
Bill,
Mike,
and I'm Brian. This weekend is the Southern Festival of Books. So what is the Southern Festival of Books?
Seems pretty self-explanatory to me.
It's a festival in the South about, you know, books.
Yeah. With writers from all over come descending upon Nashville.
Authors come from all over. They give book talks, answer questions, you know, sign books. They have books for sale. It's all free unless you want to buy some books. The Southern Festival of Books is a project of Humanities Tennessee. Happens in downtown Nashville. A lot of the panels and author talks will actually happen at the main branch of our beautiful library, and that's pretty cool. So on this episode, we're going to tell you which authors that we are excited about. Because the Southern Festival of Books is actually the weekend after this post. Hey.
Didn't that work out nicely?
Yeah, what a coinkydink.
Wait. What are the dates? October 10th through the 12th at beautiful downtown Nashville.
Right on.
All right.
Hope the weather's good.
And you know what I learned, too? I learned that these sort of book festivals that, like, C-SPAN goes out and covers, like, across the country, the Southern Festival of Books was actually the first.
Nice.
It started in 1989. Cool. Is that not cool?
Yeah, I saw a C-SPAN truck parked in front of on the side of the library last year. I was like, Wow, what the? Oh, right.
Well, a lot of the talks, if you miss them, they will be on C-SPAN, like archived on Book TV. Can you do a cold open?
Sure. So today I thought I'd talk about Jasper Ford, a British writer primarily known for the Thursday Next series of fantasy-style mysteries. Thursday Next is a literary detective who primarily investigates crimes involving books, set in an alternate 1980s Britain where the Crimean War never ended and the British public considers literature to be the most important and highest form of media. The first book, The Air Affair, her uncle Mycroft creates a device that allows people to enter the world of fiction and interact with literary characters. So, like, the villain enters Jane Eyre and wreaks havoc, burning down Thornfield Hall and injuring Rochester.
That's horrible.
Yeah, you know, I'd never actually read Jane Eyre.
Oh, I like Jane Eyre. That's a good one.
I've heard it's good. But fortunately, he explains pretty much, you know, within the text of the book, he explains the context, you know, and people like me will know what's going on. Also, in the book, her grandfather and father are time travelers. I believe in one of the books, I think this is the one where, like, her father comes back from the past to tell her that in her future, the world's going to end if she doesn't do something, which is pretty amusing.
No pressure or anything.
Yeah, you know, you need to save the world. You know, take your time. You know, you got this.
Let's have tea first.
Ooh, yeah, tea break. Some dirty thing. Also, her buddy Spike on the force hunts vampires. There's an entire chapter where, like, they go into a cemetery and take on vampires. So there's a little something for everybody. I really liked the whole, like, interacting with literary characters aspect of the book. I believe in the fourth book, Hamlet is actually one of the main characters. Where she tries to, like, you know, tell him he needs to get on with life. Like, you know, it's about midway through the play that he pops out. So, like, he hasn't committed. I don't think he does the to be or not to be speech. Eventually, she discovers that characters from different books interact with each other when they're not being read. So the protagonist from The Stars My Destination by Alfred Bester, which I mentioned in a previous episode, The Dog Days of Summer, check it out, listeners, is on a secret council with other literary characters like Mrs. Havisham from Great Expectations. Thought that was pretty fun. Now, there's a whole book called The Well of Lost Plots where she goes inside the literary universe and hangs out with a bunch of fictional characters. It's totes amazio. it's a fun, light, very kind of whimsical, very, very funny. I mean, I hadn't read most of them for a while, so I can't tell you specific jokes, but I had a really good time. They were frequently compared to, like, Terry Pratchett and Douglas Adams, and you can kind of see that kind of funny British humor. I also thought I'd briefly talk about the Nursery Crime series, starting with The Big Over Easy, which is a spinoff with Detective Jack Spratt solving crimes involving nursery rhyme characters. First book involves the possible murder of Humpty Dumpty.
The Nightmare.
Oh, no. We can have some eggs afterwards. There's another whimsical town, but this one's a little bit more noir, and he does kind of some of the nursery rhyme aspects. Anyway, I believe that he's signing his latest book, which is part of a YA series I've not read because YA is for YAs, called The Eye of Zoltar on Sunday. Good times. Check it out. Thursday next.
So would you say that Thursday next, I mean, have you read a lot of the books that the fictional characters come out of? I mean, do you need to have that
backstory
in the British literature land?
No. They usually explain through footnotes like who these characters are and why they matter. And you don't need – I mean, it kind of adds like kind of the fun if you know who they are, but you don't really have to.
You still get the story and stuff.
Yeah, you can still get what's going on. Yeah.
Because I read some of his other ones that I didn't like, but those sound really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't have a good British literature background history.
Yeah, me neither. No, that's totally fine. Like, I remember there's one where she meets a character, a woman who can't die until she reads the 10 most boring books written in English.
Is that really something to aspire to?
Well, she's like immortal and she's tired of living.
So I see. So that's her out card.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So she's like, she spends most of the book trying to read The Fairy Queen by Edmund Spencer, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I've never read it.
I've never even heard of it.
And there's a footnote about, like, just how crushingly dull it is.
Wow.
It is a two-volume poem.
The Fairy Queen is a two-volume poem?
Yeah, it's like huge, huge, like, massive.
Like Proustian?
It has something to do with Queen Elizabeth, as I recall. Like.
Well, it's metaphorical.
Yeah.
About Queen Elizabeth, right? And you said YA. What does that mean?
Young adult. Sometimes, by you crazy teens.
Sometimes known as horrible, disgusting teenagers.
Considering that seems to be about half of what I do downstairs, it went from, oh, wow, there's so much stuff for teens, that's cool, to about 6 years later where I want to, like, bonk myself in the head with every book that comes in. Because, oh, man, I heard somebody downstairs say that it's more of a genre.
It's become that, right, for sure. And, like, more and more an adult, like, to read.
Yeah, my sister is in her 30s, and that's all she reads.
What an excellent transition, Brian. Speaking of young adult books,
that some of us read
and enjoy.
I mean, YA for adults is great.
Last week, I mean, the Banned Books Week episode, I talked about a young adult title. Yeah. I love young adult titles. Hey. My book club reads young adult titles all the time.
My planned Halloween read is a young adult title. Student and listeners.
So see, you're going to redeem yourself. Okay, so anyway, I wanted to talk about Ellen Hopkins, who, if you are a member of young adult land, you know exactly who I'm talking about. Very popular with teen readers. She writes, they're actually very thick books, but they're structured especially. She tackles difficult topics like drug abuse or mental illness or even teenage prostitution. And what makes them so special is that she uses what's called verse novels. So they're technically written in poetry. Luckily, they don't rhyme because I don't know how you talk about teenage prostitution with the moon in June and the rain in Spain. But I don't think it would ring quite as true. And they're really long. I mean, they're like 500-page books, but because they're structured in stanzas and verses, it goes pretty quickly. Hopkins has had a fairly difficult life herself. She married fairly young and then got divorced. And then, finger quotes, rebound guy that she claims, they had a daughter together. And then he kidnapped the daughter and, like, wouldn't let her see her for 3 years. So now, like, she's remarried and they've adopted their daughter's baby. And, I mean, like, it's just like a soap opera. So I think that's partially why she gets some of this stuff. And her books are not judgmental. I mean, they deal with really hard issues, but she doesn't come down really on either side. She just kind of presents them to the world and said, okay, sometimes life sucks, you know, and here's kind of how you can deal with it, as opposed to saying, oh, you're a horrible person because, or you should never have done that because. And I think that's why they really resonate with teens. And I also think that that's why her verse novel style works so well, because you have to pare down your choice of words to very simple text. There's not a lot of this florid prose that, you know, makes things grandiose or, you know, villainizes things with words. It's just very simple. This is what it is, done and done. And then she goes on. So her latest book, that's probably what she's coming to talk about, was Rumble. And I read it, and I liked it. It was probably not a topic I would necessarily pick. It was about a teenage gentleman who is questioning his faith, like seriously questioning his faith, after his homosexual brother commits suicide from bullying. So you can, I mean, it's a heavy topic, but I really like the way that she handled it. And there is more to the book than just that. Like, there's actually, you can see the character's life. So if you are in young adult land and you haven't checked out Ellen Hopkins, I definitely recommend her. I love her writing style. It's very, the first one I read at first, I was afraid that I was not going to be able to make it through because I'm not a big poetry reader, but it's not. It's very narrative. It tells a great story. And there's just not a lot of extra junk that gets in the way of the message that she's trying to give. So, excellent read. Okay, Mr. Bill.
Okay, attention all you prowlers and peepers. Come to the Southern Festival of Books on Saturday, October 11th, 2014 at the Nashville Public Library at high noon. That's 12 p.m. for all you swingers. At Conference Room 1AB to hear the demon dog of American crime fiction, James Ellroy, and listen to him talk about his new novel, Perfidia. I want to recommend a few titles for you to get checked out so you can get pumped up for the event. First, we have a DVD in our collection called James Ellroy, American Dog. This is a good documentary. It goes into his past and how he became a crime writer that he is today. I also want to recommend the book My Dark Places, this nonfiction account of the unsolved murder of Ellroy's mother when he was 10 years old. And also my personal favorite, The Black Dahlia. You can skip the movie, but the book is great. I first came across this book in a bookstore. This is when I first heard of Ellroy. And by the way, you remember bookstores, don't you? And Elmore Leonard praised the book on the cover. And being a Leonard fan, well, I bought it. And while reading that book, I got down to the last 150 pages. I literally couldn't stop. It was like one revelation after another. It was just an absolute page turner. Now, the main reason I wanted to talk about James Ellroy so I could tell my James Ellroy story. When I was working at the old Ben West Library, we had the old WPLN radio station right behind us, and James Ellroy came in to promote whatever book he was promoting at the time. This was the mid-90s, too, and I'll just refer to this woman as Little Miss Sunshine. She was the receptionist at WPLN. And first of all, Mr. Ellroy, James Ellroy, is a tall man, and he's got a very distinctive mug to his face. And so when he came in, Little Miss Sunshine actually asked this question. She goes, "Well, Mr. Ellroy, what kind of questions, what kind of books do you write?" And he literally bends down, gets right into her face and goes, "Deep, dark, mysterious novels." And so it ought to be fun. So come on down to the Southern Festival of Books to listen to James Ellroy.
It's ironic that Mike went light today, but maybe the fluffiest, funnest thing. And
Everybody else went super dark.
I didn't go super dark, actually. I went, so I guess I kind of like went plan B. I'm going to talk about a chef, and that's Bryant Terry. And he got a lot of attention a few years ago when he published a cookbook called Vegan Soul Cooking, which I think it got a lot of attention because if you think about soul food, it's the opposite of vegan, right? And I just enjoyed that he was iconoclastic enough, that was brave enough to be like, I'm gonna write a vegan soul food book. But I think in particular, like, soul food has this a really deep, intense cultural thing with African-American community. And to be like, well, you know what? If you eat that all the time, it's probably not the best thing in the world. I think that to confront that or interrogate that or question that is a really brave thing to do. And I've been actually meaning for, like, since it came out a couple of years ago, trying to find a time to talk about it on the podcast. And guess what? He's coming to Southern Festival of Books. And his new book is Afro-Vegan, Farm-Fresh, African, Caribbean, and Southern Flavors Remixed. And that's probably the book that he is promoting at the time. He does use the term remixed a lot when he...
Wookie.
In his recipes. And I think it's because if you take the meat out and if you take the lard out, right, and the grease out, it's kind of like, well,
yeah,
where...
Yeah, all the flavorful stuff.
It's not really the same dish. So usually he says, you know, remixed. And what I got a lot from, like, vegan soul cooking is, like, how to prepare vegetables with a lot of flavor without that. And that's really what you get. Because what I expected was a lot of, like, tempeh, seitan, and, like, tofu recipes with different versions of barbecue sauce, different versions of hot sauce, you know? Yeah. Because those are all things that, like, basically he says it like this. It's like, you know, tofu is like a canvas, you know, that you can just paint on. But he usually has more recipes about vegetables and how to do them. And so it's like last night for dinner, I just had this like carrot and walnut salad. It was really simple. I mean, I made it because it was really easy to make before the podcast. But he talked about when he was a kid, his mother would make this
It's just walnuts, cranberries, and carrots with mayonnaise in it. But he has this recipe for a little vinaigrette, and it's totally vegan, and it tastes like mayonnaise, and you make it with...
Because, yeah, mayonnaise has eggs, right? So you can't do mayonnaise if you're vegan, right?
Well, this tasted like mayonnaise to me, like silken tofu, which is really soft tofu, almost kind of like yogurt tofu, Dijon mustard, and some lemon, and a few other things, and it's like... It really tastes like mayonnaise. And it was quite good. I would say to the vegan cynics, or vegetarian cynics, that I would say that you just be willing to try something different. I think like one of the things that you know he's going for in this book is like all of these dishes are like super flavorful. He is interested in healthy food, but he wants it to have a kick and a everything has like a flavor to it. And the interesting thing about vegan soul cooking too, if you're interested in this kind of thing, I don't know, maybe this adds to the experience of the book, maybe it doesn't, but it always has like a song and a movie to go with each recipe. He's like, so this is the inspiration. Like, this is what you should be watching before you make this recipe. This is what you should be listening to while you're cooking it. There's that little twist. The other thing about Bryant Terry is he's a food advocate. He advocates for everyone to have the right to have access to healthy food, and that's not always the case, especially in the South. And a lot of people have agitated about this in Nashville recently, that if you actually don't have good access to healthy food if you don't live in the right neighborhood. I think he probably cares about this because he's from Memphis, and he'll be at the Southern Festival of Books, and hopefully he'll talk about, you know, his activism about getting good food, healthy food, and just better food, higher quality food in the mouths of everybody at affordable prices. So Bryant Terry, check him out. Vegan Soul Cooking, and his new book is Afro-Vegan, Farm Fresh African, Caribbean, and Southern Flavors Remix. Amanda?
Yes, Brian.
What's tickling your fancy this week?
Well, I was going through the new DVDs that the library has gotten, and one jumped out at me, and it was a great show from the 90s that I loved watching when I was little, and that would be Blossom.
Whoa.
Now, for those of you who listen to this podcast, longtime listeners, know that we always talk about Big Bang Theory. Well, a couple years ago, Amy Farrah Fowler, played by Maya Bialik, joined the cast, which was awesome because they had talked about the fact that TV's Blossom was really smart, and then, you know, Maya Bialik was TV's Blossom, so now she's on the show. So with that in my brain, like, I wanted to kind of go back to her original show and just kind of see, because I loved Blossom when it was on the first time. She dances at the beginning and wears really funky clothes, and I was kind of jealous. So the library has seasons 1 and 2 that come together in a big packet, so you get them for the 21-day checkout, which is awesome. But what blew my mind is, as I was sitting there watching season 1, there's an episode where Blossom and Six go to this makeout party, and Blossom's date is Johnny Galecki, who is Leonard. I hate to tell Sheldon, but Leonard got there first. So, I didn't know that had happened. I guess there's like a ton of other connections between Blossom and Big Bang, but that was very enjoyable. So if you need something fun to do, put your name on the list. I don't know how many copies we have. I think we have a couple because I have the one checked out right now. So, but I will share eventually. So that is Blossom. And also I want to give a shout out to Jenna Von Oy, who played Six, who lives here in Nashville with her family.
I got to get this in. So for me on Big Bang Theory, like, the hot chick is not Penny, but it's Amy. Okay.
I love Amy.
That's just me. I'm just saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I've heard people say this, that basically the clothes in Blossom are what's, like, popular now, like, trending.
It's, like, all this, like, mishmash of stuff. Like, I'm like, I would never put the stuff she wears together, but on her, sometimes it works, and I'm jealous.
I've heard, like, multiple people say that. Like, I guess, like, Blossom is how it's high fashion.
Her clothes are popular?
I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Interesting.
Well, and, like, if you think about Amy, Amy's just kind of an older version because she wears all those grandma clothes that Blossom totally rocked, too. So, I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, didn't mind Bialik in real life has her doctorate in neuroscience.
Yeah, she's really
or
a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's what she was doing when they called her to come back because she has, like, 2 kids, and she's written a couple, like, mothering books. And she's like, she didn't want to go back to acting because she liked having her time with her family. And I think this was the one role that could have pulled her out, was Amy Farrah Fowler. And she said that she writes half the scripts for Amy because she's the one that knows brain stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, she doesn't know better than the writers do. So I love that show. And Blossom. I don't know who's next.
Bill. First, a narcissist, having an excessive or an erotic interest in oneself or in one's physical appearance. In other words, vain, self-loving, self-absorbed, self-obsessed, self-centered. In other words, self. Well, this book on CD came in, and I thought, well, I'll check it out. So I checked out the book on CD called The Narcissist Next Door, Understanding the Monster in Your Family, in Your Bed, and in Your World, written and read by Jeffrey Kluger. I thought I would only make it through one CD, and it turns out to be one of those books on CD that I want to drive around the block and continue to listen to, because it's rather interesting. It does get a little detailed sometimes, but the book is at its best when it talks about famous people, so it gives you a base to think of. You know, you sports stars, entertainment figures, and of course, politicians. It really goes into the politician. It also talks about the narcissist in your workplace. No names. I'm just saying.
Who could you possibly be talking about?
No names.
He always talks about me.
I'm just saying.
You think the song is about you?
I enjoyed this book more than I thought I would. It's called The Narcissist Next Door by Jeffrey Kluger. And though it doesn't mention this in the book, it doesn't mention the place where I found, after listening to this book, I went, oh, yeah. But he never mentions the place where I found narcissist dwelling place for them, that where they breed is, of course, the academic setting.
So the ivory tower.
The ivory, and it's just, this even goes to public school teachers. And I thought, you know, making this book has made me reflect back on just people I've met. And I go, that's his problem. He was a narcissist. Mike, what are you reading?
Oh, well, hello, listeners. Welcome to week two of Shocktober.
Okay, I need someone to hold my hand.
Nowadays, it feels like vampires are the exclusive province of tween girls who have outgrown fairies and unicorns.
I know, right?
But long, long ago, they were horrific monsters, essentially zombies with fangs. Fun fact, in medieval times, people didn't understand what reflections were, so they thought that when they looked in a mirror or like looked at a riverbank, you saw your soul. This is why vampires cannot see their reflection, because they're walking corpses and their souls have gone on to the afterlife. So I thought today I'd talk about David Wellington's vampire series. The first book is called 13 Bullets. It is also set in an alternate world where vampires were real, but most of them died out in the Middle Ages. The book begins when Jameson Arkley, a special agent within the U.S. government, kills a secret cache of vampires, all except for one, who becomes finds refuge within this U.S. government facility. Years later, he enlists the aid of a Pennsylvania state trooper named Laura Caxton to hunt a new vampire who is raging through the rural Pennsylvania countryside. I thought the series was super cool. It has a sense of dread throughout the whole book, because Arkley really goes into details like what the vampires are, and they are creepy. It's one of those kind of tearing off your head and gorging on your neck blood kind of things. They're died out from the Middle Ages because so many people would attack them at the same time. The vampire would kill 20, 30 people before it finally go down. It's really, really hard to kill. I really like that, the dread and the incredible violence. And it's pretty neat that he keeps it up for all five books in the series. I mean, you think by the fourth book, it's like, well, they're obviously going to live because there's a book after this. But no, there's that kind of ooh, creepiness. The vampires have some cool powers, like they can turn their victims into things called half-deads, which are like a kind of zombie thing. But they keep a portion of their intellect, but mutilate themselves before they eventually rot. And I thought it was neat that to create a vampire in this universe, you have to convince the potential vampire to kill themselves. So they only target really depressed people. I also like to recommend a website called fictfact.com, FICTFACT, to find out the proper order of the series. It tells you like all the books in the series without being spoilery and in what order. It does it for pretty much any books except for a juvenile series. Very cool website. I recommend that for this series because the first book is called 13 Bullets, but like the rest of them have numbers in the title, but they're not consecutive. So the second book is 99 Coffins. And I think the third book's like Vampire Zero or something. Anyway, I try to find it out on Amazon, I really like the first one. I try to find book two on Amazon, and I got to like book four or something, which had massive spoilers in the plot description, which really angered me. I also like to mention that Oktoberfest is this weekend, also the same time as the Southern Festival of Books. So, you could be like me and go get poop-faced drunk at the Oktoberfest and then walk over to the Southern Festival of Books and buy books that you'll never intend to read. Last year I bought Guadalcanal Diaries solely so I could have a plastic bag for my giant stein. True story.
Priorities.
I had a great time. Check it out, guys.
Cool.
I was going to say just get drunk and insult your favorite author, right?
Yeah, take that, Jasper Ford. What's your YA stuff? Go back to Thursday Next. Woo!
I don't think I can top that. I did want to talk about some new records that came out, but I also really just wanted to talk about how they came out, like how they were released. And the first one is Syro by Aphex Twin. It's the first Aphex Twin album of new material in, I think, a decade. Interesting that he announced the record on the Tor browser, the anonymous internet browser, so you could only know about it if you use Tor. Of course, the news of it leaked and it went onto the regular internet too. And then also Tom York, the lead singer of Radiohead, released a new album, but he released it as a BitTorrent bundle on BitTorrent, so you can purchase it and then you download it via BitTorrent, and it's actually the record and some videos. I'm excited about both of those records, but I just think it's really cool that they chose to announce these records and then release them in these formats, because I think Tor and BitTorrent are two technologies that are really do a social good, but are sometimes needlessly demonized. And I think it's important that public figures use them and embrace them and show how useful they are. I'm probably more excited about Aphex Twin. I'll just put it like this. Radiohead was your typical sort of like mopey indie rock band, and then Tom York started listening to Aphex Twin, and then they became the Radiohead that we know. All right, new Aphex Twin, Syro, new Tom York. I don't think the library has those yet, but I'm sure the library will figure out some way to get both of those records eventually. I don't think there are any, but the Ralph Steadman title, which for some reason we couldn't look up last week, was Proud to be Weird, with the word to intentionally spelled incorrectly.
Mm. Watch out, patrons. That book is huge. I checked it out. It's like, I have no idea how I could read this. Like, it's too big for me to read in my lap. You'd have to read it in bed. So just, you know, FYI.
It's a big, heavy art book. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
All right.
You want to sit down for a little while?
Sure, I guess I'm ready to sit down. We're six. So much for the buddy system.
Nice house.
What I can see of it looks nice.
Can I get you something, soda, chips?
No, thanks, I'm fine.
Are you sure? Because the sodas are right over there.
Thanks. Thanks anyway. I'm fine, really.
Enjoying the movie, Blossom?
Blossom, are you all right?
Did I just scream?
No. Are you sure you're all right?
I'm fine. I'm fine, I think.